FM CHD3 Detroit, KMPS HD3 Seattle, WBMX HD3 Boston,
and on AOL Radio
and Yahoo Launchcast.
CBS Radio's The New Sky.
Enlightened philosophers tell us that we are divine beings in human form. Let's get real here. How can we live a busy life with a job, kids, and a mortgage and still be spiritual? Join CJ Liu as she tackles real life issues through a spiritual lens and talks with experts in relationships, work, and more. You'll get practical life skills and learn how to touch, feel, and experience a whole new way of living. Be a force for good. And fire it up with CJ. Log on, fireitupwithcj.com, and call CJ now.
248-545-SOUL.
CBS Radio's The Sky. Believe.
Welcome back to CBS Sky Radio. This is Fired Up with CJ. You can find her at her website, fireitupwithcj.com. And this is it, ladies and gentlemen, the last week of September. And we're continuing our focus on parenting, and today we're going to talk about teen brain development. So get your nice cup of apple cider and join us for a great show.
Hey, welcome. Thank you, Cassandra. So welcome, everyone, to the Fire It Up with CJ show. I am CJ Liu, and this week was kind of crazy. Cassandra, my son is going on his first camping trip ever.
Oh,
and
awesome.
They started it for – it's a three-day camping trip. And you know what? They tell us as parents to just let them go on their own. So this time I'm like, you're on your own, buddy. You know, I'm buying you all the stuff that you have to pack and make sure that your gear's ready. You've checked through the list, all that. I'm done. I bought the items. I checked it through. Now it's all yours. Get it to school on time. So on Monday morning, it was total mayhem in our house. He's running around. He's literally running upstairs. He's running downstairs. He's printing the list. He's looking at stuff. He threw all his stuff in the bag. It was completely unorganized. Like, his socks were next to the cups. And, you know, I mean, it's like, when you're camping, honey, you can't have stuff unorganized like that, because you'll just go crazy and everything will fall in the dirt. And he's like, I don't know, Mom. I can't do it. I can't think. I literally just can't think.
Aww.
And I felt sad for him. And then I thought, and thank goodness I read our guest, Dr. Scott Schwartzenwelder's, oh my gosh, I totally debauched his name in the book. Dr. Scott, What Are They Thinking? And you know what? I had a lot of compassion. I didn't get mad. I was like, it's okay, honey. Let's slowly, I'll assemble stuff. We'll work as a team and we'll get this stuff. And basically it was around 7:15 when this all happened, and his carpool was kind of like coming at 7:40, and we were just all running around the house getting his camping stuff ready.
Now, when does he come home? Did he make it through?
No, he's going to go next week.
Oh, it's next week.
But what I was so interesting is he literally said, I can't think. So today we're going to be talking to Dr. Scott about who will help us understand the teen brain. And literally, they really probably can't think the way that they used to. So welcome, Scott. Is my son unusual? Is this typical?
Oh, it's totally typical. And thank you for having me on the show. I really appreciate it and look forward to the hour. Yeah, I think what you experienced with him is quite typical, and I also think, by the way, that your response of just kind of providing a calm and organizing influence was exactly the right thing to do, because a lot of times, you know, a parent just needs to step in and provide that kind of organization and focus that adolescents are often not able to have, and if you can do that in a way that's not threatening and not authoritarian, then you're doing a lot to build a good relationship with your kid at an important time.
Well, who would have known what would have happened if I hadn't read your book? It may have been a totally different scenario. I may have not been calm or helpful. I may have been like, I told you 1,000 times to get this thing ready. I literally told him 3 or 4 times. I'm like, hey, just a reminder, you know, you have this thing. And, you know, isn't that, you know, as I was telling the story, I realized that it's a great metaphor for his brain, right? He was like, packing this backpack, and everything was jumbled together. It's like spoons with socks with flashlights and long underwear. I'm like, really? Is this how you're going to pack everything? But from his mind, it was like, yeah. You know, because there's
From his standpoint, it was probably as organized as it could get without help. And, and that is totally normal. There's the parts of the brain that are still undergoing a lot of development at that age, and in fact for considerably longer than that, include prominently the frontal lobes, you know, the area of the brain right behind your forehead and above your eyes, that are engaged in a process that we neuropsychologists call executive function. And it's a metaphor for the business world, right? That is, in the business world, the executive sort of oversees the actions of the various departments in the same way that the frontal lobes oversee the actions of the various parts of the brain. Mm-hmm. Until the frontal lobes are developed, and that doesn't really fully happen until a person's mid-20s, there is a lot of disorganization. You know, the marketing department isn't always talking into the sales or delivery departments, right? And so analogously, your son might have known, you know, all of the things that he needed to have and sort of when to get it together. But when it came to actually executing all those plans, the executive was out to lunch. And so you end up with a kid who's running around and from the way you describe it, feeling pretty uncomfortable, you know?
Yeah.
And what he said was, you know, I just can't think. Well, he wasn't lying to you. At some organizational level, he really couldn't. The good news is that he was frustrated by that. He saw, you know, he could tell.
Right.
And the even better news is that once you came in and stood in for his frontal lobes for a little while and said, here, let me take over this process. Let me help you
right.
with this process. He was comfortable with that. So that's all good news. And it sounds very normal. And if parents would, you know, could relax a little bit, realize that their kid's not doing all these things just to be defiant, and be able to step in and be willing to become the frontal lobe for a while and do so calmly, I think, you know, there's a lot of potential for, you know, relationships to improve and kids to move through adolescence in a calm and comfortable way.
Yeah, so I can understand how that would help. Like, you know, I know that from reading your book that making decisions, so I can see if you have no executive around, it's really hard to make decisions. But how is it related to, and I can understand how it's related to planning, how's it related to memory and impulse control?
Oh, well, memory is, you know, it has a very strong relationship to memory and impulse control. Memory in particular is very interesting because, you know, there's sort of like the basic machinery of being able to store information or not, right? And that doesn't have much to do with the frontal lobes.
Mm-hmm.
But the frontal lobes are all about deciding what to remember, how to remember it, where to store it, and how to get it back. So while the frontal lobes are still developing, a kid, you know how if you observe a kid during adolescence, they can store an immense amount of information. Pretty much everything that comes in will stick, even the stuff you don't want to stick, it sticks, right?
Very true, yes.
Right, but it's not particularly well organized necessarily. They might not be able to make decisions about what is important information to retain versus unimportant information that I should let go. That's how the frontal lobes influence memory. So it's a very important influence, though it doesn't have to do with the simple ability of storage.
Right. So it's basically taking all the information and like allocating resources to veer, and allocating and retrieving resources, which the frontal lobe is responsible for, but it's also related to memory. Is what I think you just said, right?
That's a good way to look at it.
And then impulse control. How is this related to frontal lobe stuff?
Frontal lobes are all about providing what we call response inhibition. Okay, so when you have a reaction, you know, you have a natural reaction to a threatening stimulus or to a social affront or a piece of candy sitting right there in front of you. A lot of what the frontal lobes do is they modulate. So your brain, the core parts of your brain that are just all about gaining pleasure and doing things that help you to survive and all that stuff, they're going to say, go grab that piece of candy because it's got sugar in it, right? And sugar makes you feel good. Or, you know, go grab that guy by the collar, you know, because he just insulted you. But the frontal lobe gets in there and sort of dampens that response, right? It doesn't take it away, right? It doesn't take away the feeling, the anger or the arousal or the erotic feeling or whatever it happens to be in response to that stimulus. But it provides, again, sort of like, you know, this executive function idea, a modulator, somebody to say, you know, okay, look, right, that's an appropriate feeling to have, but the behavior might not be appropriate to follow it up with.
Right.
And until those frontal lobes are fully developed and that circuitry is intact, people have trouble modulating their responses. And you see that in adults who suffer frontal lobe damage many times. They'll become disinhibited. All right. So you take a person who's had a head injury, they got frontal lobe damage, they will look very much like an adolescent in some ways with respect to not having the same ability that they used to have to inhibit inappropriate responses.
Interesting. Okay, so I'm going to move on to a slightly different topic that you have in your book, but completely related. You talk about the brain being a sponge at this time, and that the brain develops a huge amount of gray matter, then it actually gets pared down, and it starts, like, focusing on what's important and what's not, and that learning skills like languages and sports and all of that is so important. So tell me a little bit about that. How does that? What's happening with the brain, and why is it so important to
That's actually one of the most interesting things that, you know, that neuroscience has discovered in the last 10 or 15 years, is that as this brain development occurs across adolescence, it's not just a simple building up of cells and circuits. That in fact, as you describe, very early in adolescence, and in fact before adolescence even hits, you've got this great proliferation of brain cells and circuitry, and actually what happens during adolescence is it gets sculpted back, okay? So you end up, but you start off with a bunch of redundancy in those systems. Think about it like the process of making a sculpture, right? You got this big block of marble, right? And over time you chip away and you chip away and you chip away, and you kind of reveal then the sculpture that was kind of housed in that, right? The brain is a little bit like that during adolescence. It's sculpting itself back, and so that the circuits that it retains are the ones that are really important, and so that there's not a lot of extra talk, not a lot of extra chatter in those circuits, because extra chatter, it means inefficiency. So it's really a way that the brain is becoming more and more efficient across adolescence. And so that's, you know, that's a good way to think about it. But it was surprising, you know, when people first started discovering that in fact you're losing cells during adolescence, not gaining them.
Well, then you know, I know that I interviewed another brain person, and she said it's really important for them to try lots of different things. So why? Why is it important for them? I understand the pruning process in it, and your brain is getting more efficient, but why is it important to learn lots of different things? Something about the synapses? Yeah, go ahead.
I mean, because the brain thrives on experience, okay? And the broader the array of experiences that the brain is exposed to, the broader the array of problems that it has to solve, the more it's going to adapt, okay? There's a process called synaptic plasticity that is what it implies, that the brain is really capable of of changing in response to experience. That's the hallmark of how it develops. It's a hallmark of how we learn. It's a hallmark of all adaptive behavior, is this capacity that the brain has for plasticity within its circuits. If you don't expose it to a sufficient array of different kinds of experiences, then it doesn't get the chance to adapt and manifest that plasticity as broadly as it could.
Okay, but what is that? So, what does that mean if you don't have an array? What's an example of array of experiences then?
Well, you know, if you think about the way we live our lives as human beings, right? We, you know, there are certain things that we do physically. We walk around, we run, we play sports. That's exercising plasticity in certain circuits of the brain, right? We solve math problems. That's another kind of regional specificity. We solve social problems. That involves yet other things, right? So I'm talking about this diversity of experience that people have. And if you think about what adolescents are supposed to do, right, what adolescence is about is moving this little human being from a protected and restricted environment out into the wide world. Or as my co-author Aaron likes to say, out into the deep end of the gene pool. Right? because it's all about, from an evolutionary standpoint, it's all about getting reproductive advantage, right? So you want to be as broad as you can be. So, of course, this freaks out most modern parents because my kid doesn't want to be around me anymore. You know, my kid thinks I'm crazy, just wants to be with his friends and all that. But it's important to understand that is precisely what they're supposed to be doing.
Exactly.
Our job as parents is to help them do it safely.
Yep, I hear you. So that great information, the most succinct and clear explanation I've heard in a long time. Thank you, Dr. Scott, author of What Are They Thinking? Next up, we're going to be talking about, we're actually going to reveal the shocking facts about your child's brain on drugs. Make sure to check out www.fireitupwithcj.com, where you'll get lots of other great interviews just like this on parenting. We'll be right back.